The Public News Service Daily Newscast, July 31st, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. The gunman who opened fire in a New York City skyscraper, killing four people, purchased the rifle used in the attack from his boss at a Las Vegas casino. That from the BBC. They report the supervisor, who has not been named, is cooperating with officials and has not been charged. It is not known whether the sale was legal. 27-year-old Shane Tamora died by suicide and left a note claiming to be suffering from CTE, a brain disease triggered by head injuries, police said. The BBC notes the attack took the lives of NYPD officer Didral Islam, executive Wesley LaPartner, security guard Arlen A. Chen, and a real estate worker, Julia Hyman. Police said the automatic rifle, also known as an assault rifle, was sold by the Horseshoe Casino supervisor for $1,400. Some Georgia students heading back to school this fall may notice a new addition at the doors: high-tech weapons detectors.
Muskogee County School District leaders say the goal is to make schools safer without creating long lines or slowing anyone down. Chief Operations Officer for the district, Travis Anderson, says the devices are part of the 2024 eSplots campaign, which focuses on ways to address major issues in the district. He says this system will provide practical steps to deter and detect threats on campus at middle and high schools, as well as athletic facilities, starting at the beginning of the school year.
We are not rolling this out on the first day of school. It will be a slow rollout throughout the district, so before September is over, all those schools will be fully implemented with the weapons detection system.
Anderson says the district deliberately chose a phased rollout to ensure schools have time to adjust. Once in place, the detectors will be a standard entry point for students, staff, and visitors at each site. I'm Catherine Carley.
And a public funding mechanism for Seattle elections is up for renewal in next week's election. The Democracy Voucher Program was passed 10 years ago.
It offers voters four $25 vouchers to use each election cycle for candidates who accept certain fundraising and spending limits. Supporters say it's a model for more inclusive democracy, touting higher turnout, increased participation from more small donors, and a more diverse candidate field. Spencer Olson is with People Powered Elections Seattle, which supports Proposition 1.
It's really important that people's voices are heard and that candidates can run being supported by their constituents versus just listening to those wealthiest donors, those special interests that have historically been the loudest voices at the table and really dominated what priorities rise to the top.
The voucher is supported by a property tax. Olson and other supporters hope to bring this model statewide. Critics say the program isn't big enough to make a difference in elections and hasn't curbed outside spending. Ballots are due by 8 p.m. on Tuesday. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
This is Public News Service. Healthcare workers in Massachusetts will join a National Day of Action tomorrow, calling for an end to federal policies they say harm children and families.
Hundreds of thousands of residents are expected to lose their Medicaid and SNAP benefits following cuts to social safety net programs in the recently passed federal spending bill. Marlisha Aho with 1199 SIEU United Healthcare Workers East says the state is bracing for nursing home closures, job losses, and fewer available services.
We need to invest in healthcare, not cut. And so we are really incredibly worried about what this means to care in Massachusetts for everyone.
Backers of the federal budget say spending cuts were needed to ensure an extension of the 2017 tax cuts. Aho says last year's financial collapse of Steward Healthcare already put the state in a fragile position. Rallies are planned tomorrow in Boston, Worcester, Pittsfield, and several other locations. I'm Catherine Carley.
State officials say total cuts to Massachusetts federal health care funding could top more than $3 billion annually and will have significant ripple effects. Roughly 58,000 Wyomingites and 63 million Americans provide ongoing care to adults or kids with medical conditions or disabilities. A new report says that is a 45% increase since the year 2015.
The new AARP report shows the average caregiver spends 27 hours per week on caregiving tasks. AARP's CEO, Myesha Minter-Jordan, notes that caregiving can impact a person's finances as well as their physical and mental health.
We need systems that see caregivers, value them, and support them because they are not just helping families, they are holding up our entire healthcare system.
Minter-Jordan says AARP is advocating for a national paid family medical leave policy, workplace protections for caregivers, federal tax credits, and access to respite care, training, and support services. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
And Minnesota's smaller school districts are preparing for another year of doing more with less.
Joe Gould teaches social studies in Cass Lake, and this week he's in Washington, D.C. for conferences led by the American Federation of Teachers. He's also sharing his views about budget constraints with the state's congressional delegation. His district only has about 1,000 students and gets most of its funding from the state and local property taxes. But federal funding helps cover needs like special education, and Gould says that has been inadequate.
For a long time now, the federal government has not been living up to its promise for fully funding special education in our schools.
As needs grow, smaller districts have a hard time maintaining special ed staff because larger districts offer higher pay. I'm Mike Moen.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Remember, endless to support it. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.